source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Gathering here on the Para-X Network, and this is Heidi. Last one of the year, 2018, on its way out. Our end here.
Steffi Jean has been muted. I'm so sorry, but now I'm back.
Because I forget, because I can hear you, because we're sitting in the same room.
Oh my gosh.
So, Stephanie was talking that whole time and nobody can hear
her. Yeah, I was eating popcorn during the intro, so I put it on mute so nobody could hear, and then, I forgot to turn it back. So I'm back. I'm here now.
And I apologize because I'm sitting across from her so I can hear her, and I forget that I'm not hearing her through the radio. So there we go. Last show of the year, and we have officially screwed it up. That's all right.
You know what? It's been a really long year, and I am, after tomorrow and Thursday, I am off work until January 2nd, and I tell you what, I cannot wait to have just some time.
Yeah, you need some
time. Oh, it's been a crazy year this year.
Yeah, it has been crazy. And I'm okay with 2018 heading out.
Me too.
Coming in 2019, and here's to, you know, onward and upward, mm-hmm. good things ahead. So, mm-hmm. yeah, and it's good.
Yeah, it is.
So we are sitting here and eating popcorn, holiday popcorn, and we opened some Christmas presents, and we're just having a good old time here. And no alcohol to be found.
No alcohol.
We're all clear that we are doing this completely sober, and we still screw it up. So...
You know, we had to make the last one of the year special, can I just say?
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, we've had another busy week leading from last week to this week, and I know we've got a busy end of the year coming up, too. We've got some a Squatch search coming up, and we had a Facebook Live chat last week.
So three of us, so Kim and Katie were here at my house for the weekend, and so we decided, Kim has always wanted to do a Facebook Squatch chat, and we just never think about it, because when we're on the road or whatever, we just never have time, right? There's just no time. So I said, let's do it. So we hung up the banner in the Gathering Studios, and we did this really, it was a really fun Squatch chat. Everybody should check it out. It's on our Facebook page. The first 3 minutes are us going, bah, is it going on? What's happening here? But once you get beyond that, it's really a fun chat. And Brandy, our friend, was down there asking us questions. And she's really interested in becoming a Squatcher. And she lives down by Kim. So that would be great for her, because they could do things together and pair up. And it would be awesome. But so I don't know if she's going to. But she was asking us lots of questions. So it was like we had audience participation, just like we would at a live Squatch chat if we were somewhere up north, for example. So
very
it's
cool.
really fun. So if you can get the lowdown on how Squatchers was created and what we do and some stories and the crazy girls of the bunch and the whole nine yards. So take a look. It's about 30 minutes.
I know I couldn't be there because I was working, and we had our priestess circle transitional gathering that day, and so I worked in the morning, and then we had that the rest of the day, and which was really awesome, but I was bummed that I missed the chat, but next time.
Yeah, we'll do it. You know what actually we were talking about is we thought maybe because we're going for a search, on the 28th that maybe we should maybe try all get together and just do a 15-minute one after that as kind of a closure, you know, because we'll all be together and people could ask questions if they want. And, you know, I think it's kind of a good idea. So let's
Sounds
try
good.
For that. Yeah.
Perfect. So, yeah, so here we are, and it's our holiday show today because, of course, the next 2 weeks are holidays, and we will not be on the air. Just brace yourself, everyone, and prepare. We will have a couple of reruns, and then we'll be back strong for 2019. But we're doing our holiday show tonight and talking about some a fun topic that we had loads of fun with last year, that it was just Stephanie and I coming up with this stuff and looking up stuff on the internet. We actually have a professional joining us today who knows way more about this than we do. That's just filled with knowledge and all sorts of cool stories and facts and folklore and whatnot. So I believe we have Kyle Cadell on the line. Are you there, Kyle?
I am. You guys throw around the term professional way too easily.
In our eyes, you're a professional.
Yeah. Makes and me feel good.
Good. Well, you are. You've got a lot of knowledge that you come with, and we appreciate that. And if you could just, for those people that are tuning in to your story the first time, could you just give everybody a little background on where you come from, how you got into this, and what you do, Kyle?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like you said, my name is Kyle Cadell. I live in Somerset, Kentucky, and I am actually the owner and co-curator at the International Paranormal Museum and Research Center. And we have a small museum space that covers anything paranormal, ghosts, Bigfoot, aliens, voodoo, psychic, a little bit of everything. So we are open, normal hours, don't want to do a full plug, blah, 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 check us out on Facebook. But we started that because me and my business partner, Zach, actually have been ghost hunting for about 15 years now. We got into it about 2004, when shows like Ghost Hunters started coming out. We honestly didn't believe in what they were doing and decided to prove it to ourselves, and didn't take but a few months for us to become healthy skeptics but completely believe in everything. We both had things follow us home, and from there we've just moved on. After a few years, we started doing personal investigations of people's homes that were having issues, and throughout the years we've picked up a lot of haunted items and cursed objects and stuff, and eventually, we had enough to open a museum, which we did a little over a year ago. So
awesome!
I really enjoy all the weird stuff. I enjoy going to you and I. I met you all through the CryptidCon here in Kentucky this year. So I love going to all those weird things.
Yes, as do we.
And unfortunately, we didn't meet you until like an hour before we were done. It was done, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah, but we met.
Yeah,
and
it
now
got a little slower.
It did. Well, that's the deal, is we could finally walk around and have some time to chit-chat with the other vendors there, so that's how we met you. Mm-hmm. And I had to buy one of your extremely awesome Mothman t-shirts.
Yeah, and I want to know how come I didn't get one of those. I don't know what I was doing when you were buying that, but now I'm extremely jealous every time I see you wearing it.
And she says that because I wear it a lot.
You do. I know, you do.
It's one of my favorite t-shirts.
We will have them back, definitely. And I'm working on a Hopkinsville Goblins design right now, the aliens that landed in the 50s.
Are you going to sell this online? That's my next question, since I don't live in Kentucky.
You know, that is a very good question, and I do plan on starting an Etsy store at some point. It's definitely on my list of to-do things to start a store and sell all of our merchandise. We have amazing artists, and they sell out immediately at, like, the Mothman Festival. Those Mothman shirts are gone, so I'd really like to be able to have a online link, you know.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was out of all the places that were selling t-shirts there, you guys had the best t-shirts, and that's why I bought yours and nobody else's. Yours was the best. Mm-hmm. No offense to everybody else's, but
thank
you guys
are
the best ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was cool.
I appreciate that.
So,
cool. I'll be honest, my favorite church that was there was the, I think she was relatively close to you guys. It was a Bigfoot holding onto a tree, like a oil painting onto a t-shirt. It reminded me of those wolf t-shirts where they're howling at the moon.
Oh,
so I absolutely bought one of those.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see it because it sounds cool, but I don't even remember seeing that. So, okay, well,
It's awesome. It's so cheesy, it's cool kind of thing. I wear it constantly.
Well, the cheesier, the better sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah, you got to do it.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, I know we had thrown back and forth a few ideas before the show here about some Christmas cryptids, and I'd love to have you start with where you want to go with your favorite Christmas cryptid. If you were to pick one to start with, where do you want to go?
Well, my absolute favorite, her name is actually Grýla. She's from Iceland. And Grýla or Grýla, it's spelled G-R-Y-L-A. She's actually a vicious character that was so scary at one point that the Icelandic government had to ban her from their Christmas celebrations. But
so they actually banned her?
Yeah, it was in 1746, and she's, once I get into the story, you'll kind of understand why, but her story was so scary, and parents were using it to get the children to behave so much, and it was terrifying the children, but the government finally intervened on it. So
serious.
But,
serious business. Well, take it away. Yeah, let's hear about Grýla.
Yeah, absolutely. Grýla, first of all, her name means growler, roughly translated. And for the most part, she is supposed to be a giantess, a huge creature that in Icelandic tradition, she's a troll, of course. You know, they have a lot of trolls over there.
Oh, sure.
But she's a troll, ogress, almost looks like a witch. In some lore, she looks like a sheep person. But for the most part, she looks like just a giant troll that has hooves. So she's
hooves.
Almost normal, but very
almost not really normal.
Yeah, but yeah, she the first time she was written about was actually in the 13th century. So she's been around for a long time.
That's
before.
A long time. Oh my gosh.
Really? Yeah, she was around before Christmas, basically. Was celebrated in the area, and like she didn't make her appearance in Christmas tales until about 1700. But
so wait a minute, where was she before Christmas? She was associated just, or was she just around in general, not necessarily associated with Christmas?
Yeah, she was still used kind of as a scare tactic for her parents. She was always on the prowl for naughty children. Yeah.
Okay.
But once he brought in Christmas, it was a perfect tie-in. Because they actually, and I'll talk more about this in a little bit, they actually gave her children in the Christmas story. She has these 13 awful children that torment people as well. But she...
Oh, lovely.
Her big thing is she can tell year-round if kids are naughty or nice, and she will go and find the naughty children. And the especially bad ones, she actually kills them. A lot of the, you know, Santa will just give you a lump of coal or something. But she actually will murder the children, chop them up, and put them in her favorite recipe, which the name of it is roughly translates to Naughty Kid Stew.
Well, I guess that would be the main ingredient then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so of course. That is much more terrifying than most of the other stories, which even Krampus would just enslave you until you were good, or beat you. But
or beat you.
Yeah.
I guess that's better than getting eaten.
Yeah. But poor Grýla, she has been married 3 times in her life, in her very long life. She had her first husband, Gustav. She ended up not liking him very much, and one day was bored and decided to eat him as well.
Oh, dear.
So that doesn't really work out. And
I see that she
was on the hunt. Exactly. She eventually got remarried. It doesn't really say what happened to her second husband. I'm sure it didn't end happily, though. But right now she's married to a guy, and I cannot speak Icelandic at all. But his name is something like Lapaluti. And poor Lapaluti, he's a troll, but he's a regular-sized troll. So he's much smaller than her, and he's lazy, and he just stays at home in the cave. She lives in a cave in the volcanic fields. He just stays at home and lets her do all the children killing. So
well,
he's a little bit lazy.
I'm imagining that he doesn't have say much of anything, considering what she would do to him if he got out of line. So that's kind of scary. And what I think is really interesting is that you said that the government put a ban on her being used in general, in the population, media, and whatever.
Yeah.
That implies that she's real. Like, that there's some reality to it or truth to it. Because if it's lore, what can they really do? If they're actually putting a ban on it, that would imply, doesn't it, that there's some substance behind what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning.
Well, exactly. that she was so terrifying and being used so frequently that, I don't know, it's 1746. You know, I'm sure it's not ideal conditions anyways, anywhere in the world. And then the fact that this had gotten so out of hand that they had to, all right, at least stop this one terrible thing from happening.
That's wild. So here's this troll, supposed folklore that's been told stories, you know, generation after generation, and the government steps in and goes, no more of this.
No more of this, honey.
That's intense. That's intense.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good...
And in the research that I've done, the only similar thing in any of the stories about, like, these Christmas monsters is Krampus. You know, he's German, and in the 30s, I actually think this is hilarious, the Nazi Party actually banned him, not because he was terrifying, but because he was a socialist.
Oh. Krampus was a socialist. Who knew?
The Nazis thought that, you know, he goes around putting candy in the shoes of good people and even gives the bad kids birch sticks. You know, so we can't have those socialists running around.
We can't have that. So, well, I guess they're, you know, they stick to their rules, I guess, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
Who knew? So Krampus, tell us a little bit more about Krampus, unless there's more about your troll from Iceland.
Rila. Well, that's the majority about her, but I do want to mention in her cave, in addition to her lazy husband, they have a pet. They have, I can't pronounce his real name, but it translates to the Yule Cat, and he's actually a massive cat, similar to the Wampus Cat, known in eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina. He's a classic cryptid, basically, just a massive cat that's bigger than the houses that were in Iceland. And his big thing, and I love this, is he goes around looking for children that have not received new clothes for Christmas. And if they have not received new clothes, they eat them. The cat eats them.
That doesn't even make sense, because what kid is going to hook themselves up? Because that's how you're going to... It's the parents' fault if you don't have clothes, so then the cat eats the kid, when it's really the parents' fault, right?
Right, but and there's a couple of different explanations for why that is. One of them is that kids used to be in charge of making their own clothes for the year, their own, like, winter socks and stuff. And traditionally, you know, winter solstice is the longest night of the year. It's December 21st. And so that's about when winters get really bad. They only have about 4 hours of sunlight in Iceland. So it's cold and dark all the time. And so this was a way for parents to urge their kids to finish up their winter clothes.
So, oh, they have the kids at work. That's why. That's how it happens. I was like, well, it's the parents' fault then. Well, no, it's because the kids aren't working hard enough.
Exactly. And then even after that, they continued it because, you know, even in America, the tradition is you get, as a kid, you get socks for Christmas and you hate it.
Yeah.
So here, if you get socks for Christmas, you better enjoy it because you're not going to be eaten alive by the Yule
cat. It keeps you from going down the gullet. So
yep.
That's a good thing. So let's all ask for socks for Christmas, at least.
Exactly.
Some piece of clothing.
We don't want that Grilla coming after us.
Or
I want to know.
That's her cat.
Or the cat. I want to know how she got three husbands, though. I mean, if she has hooves and she eats them, I mean, doesn't she have a reputation already?
That's
before
social media.
Well, what?
That's before social
well,
media.
Well, I know.
They
but...
didn't know. It's like, how are they supposed to know?
Maybe there's some desperate trolls.
Well, maybe she was really a beauty back, you know, for those trolls. I don't know, but gee.
Well, if she's a troll, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good question. But yeah, so her and her husband, the giant Yule cat, live in their cave along with
their 13
sons.
And they're all little trolls then.
They are all little trolls. There used to be a lot more, but there was a 1932 poem that kind of standardized the whole history of it. Kind of like our "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" poem. Standardized our image of Santa. They had their poem that standardized the 13 sons. And they traditionally come to town the last 13 days before Christmas. So starting on December 12th, the first one will show up, and each one will individually stay for 13 days. They each have their own little mischief that they pull. Mm-hmm. And they all have names that are pretty self-explanatory for what they do. Once we get through the list, you'll actually kind of feel bad for them. They're almost all hungry. And almost all the little annoyances that they pull on people are really just because they're hungry. It's sad.
Oh.
But
So she's eating everyone. Yeah. They're getting nothing.
Yeah, I'm guessing that they don't like the taste of nasty kids and naughty kids stew, you know?
Yeah, probably not. Wow.
But yeah, so... I'll just quickly run through the each one. Won't give too much of an explanation, but on December 12th, Sheep Coat Cold shows up. And I'm just giving the literal translations here. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce anything. But,
no Icelandic
Coat
names
Cold.
Here.
No, sorry. I'm sure it would be entertaining, though. But yeah, old Sheep Coat Cold, he basically just comes and harasses your sheep out in the field. Doesn't let him get any sleep, bothers him, and poor kid actually is hindered because he has peg legs. He doesn't have real legs.
Peg legs?
Yeah. So the sheep can outrun him, I guess.
Oh.
But then the next night, Gully Gawk shows up. And Gully Gawk hides in gullies or ditches on property, waiting to enter the cow sheds to steal all the cow's milk. He's just thirsty. He wants some milk.
Uh-huh.
Next, we have Stubby, who is named because he's actually very short. Poor guy. And he reaches up on top of your stoves and everything and steals your pans that have, like, baked-on crust and will eat the crust from them.
Oh. Okay. These guys don't sound as bad as her.
No.
So, after Stubby, we have Spoonlicker. On the 15th, and he, true to his name, will steal spoons to lick them, steal all the leftover food on them. And in his description, it specifically said, poor little spoon licker is thin from malnutrition.
Oh. I'm starting to feel bad for these little cryptids.
Well, yeah, how come Big Mama doesn't feed them something, for heaven's sakes?
Exactly. She just lets them loose. And
This is a family of trolls. I don't think that there's fairness amongst them.
Probably not.
So on December 16th, you get a visit from Pot Scraper, and he just steals your leftovers from your different pots and stuff.
I'm guessing, yeah. Okay. Hanging out with
Spoonlicker. Yeah, well... Spoonlicker's best friend comes on the 17th. His name's Bowlicker.
And
he hides under your beds. Yeah. He hides under your beds waiting for you to set down your bowl of whatever you're eating and then steals it and finishes it.
Oh. Well, I'm kind of half tempted to start leaving the stuff around to see
if they come around.
Yeah. Just in case.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they stay for 13 days, but really these aren't too bad annoying. Well, the next one gets a little annoying. The next one's name is Door Slammer, and he'll, true to his name, slam doors, especially in the middle of the night to wake people up. So I don't like him too much.
Yeah. Well, he sounds like half the reasons that we have paranormal investigations.
That's right.
Exactly, yeah. Most of the time, when you think it's a poltergeist, it's just poor little Door Slammer. Attention because his mom doesn't love him.
Door Slammer.
Door Slammer.
Write that down. Door Slammer. Yeah.
And then on the next night, the 19th, is the Skyr Gobbler. Now, Skyr is an Icelandic type of yogurt. So Skyr Gobbler just comes and steals all your yogurt.
Oh. Well, that's fine. They can't have it.
They're also very specific on what they want to eat. I don't know why they each don't use multiple tactics, but I don't know.
One likes yogurt, one likes cow's milk, one likes to lick spoons, and, crazy.
Yeah. Next is Sausage Swiper. This guy would make me mad.
And this one eats sausages.
Yeah, he hides in the rafters and waits to steal your sausages that you're smoking. after that, we have a window peeper. He is a little pervert. He looks for things to steal through your window.
Oh.
after him is Doorway Sniffer. Which he has a very good sense of smell, and he loves this leftover bread dish that they eat, and will come and steal it. So we're getting closer to Christmas. The next one on the 23rd, his name is Meat Hook. And in most of the pictures of him, he actually looks more terrifying. But the only reason why his name is Meat Hook is he carries a meat hook to steal your meat. So, he doesn't even punish you with it. But I guess just the fact that he has that meat hook, you know? And then the last guy, comes on Christmas Eve, is the Candle Stealer. Now, at this point, candles were made out of tallow, which is fat, so they were edible. And so this little guy would come and steal your candles, steal children's candles specifically, to leave these poor little kids in the dark alone on Christmas Eve with Door Slammer in the background and no sausage to eat. And they'll come and steal your candles and eat them.
Well, that's a little annoying, but I guess. So
that is all 13 of them. But my favorite, whenever they standardized in 32, my favorite got left off the list. And his name was Lung Basher. And Lung Basher carried his lungs outside of his body and would find naughty children and hit them with his own lungs.
Okay. That's so weird. I suppose.
That's bizarre.
Whatever works.
Lung Basher.
Yeah, I guess that's why he got left off the list.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that got... He got ousted along with the ban from the government.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Karen has a good comment. She says, I think these are just representations of bad characteristics. However, they are a lot worse than just naughty kids. So what is the message? I don't know. I guess maybe if you're a bad person that one of these 13 weirdos are going to come to your door. I don't really know.
Is it?
Or if you're naughty.
They're more of an annoyance.
Do they target people that are naughty, or they just come around and do it to everybody?
I do want to mention, because that actually brings up a good point. I don't know if you guys have watched the new Netflix Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but just released...
It's good.
Have you seen their holiday episode yet?
No. Mm-hmm.
They just released the Christmas episode. You gotta watch it. It's awesome. Where they actually brought Grilla onto the show. So they introduced her. And they did things differently than her tradition. Like in Grilla, or in Sabrina, Grilla was actually a witch that had made a pact with. I don't want to give away too much about the show, but
yeah, no spoiler alerts.
She made a pact with another witch to eat. They were starving, and they made a pact to eat their own children. So Grilla went first and killed her child, and they both ate her. And then after she did that, the other witch backed out. She said, well, no, I'm full. Well, I'm not going to kill my kid. Yeah.
Not just doing kidding. It. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I have to watch it.
But, yeah. So in Sabrina, her Yule lads are impish childlike spirits that come and bother witches that are not protected by the Yule log. And long story short, they end up at the Spellman house, and the only way to get rid of them in the show is to invite Grilla into the home to take them back to the mountains.
So she takes them out.
They actually all make an appearance in this year's Sabrina, and it's a little bit different, it's awesome.
I'm going to check it out, because I have been binge watching it, and it's pretty interesting. It's cool. I mean, I'm surprised that there's a show like that.
What is it called?
It's the Sabrina. It's a
It's on Netflix?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a new Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I agree. I'm surprised by the show, too, because, you know, the old one with Melissa Joan Hart or whatever her name is, that's a family-friendly show that everyone knows. And in this one, in the first 30 seconds, someone's throat gets cut, and they're all Satanists. Like, they say, oh, praise Satan instead of praise God, or for Satan's sake.
Oh, gee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're talking to the Dark Lord, and this is, you know, it's some of it's disturbing. And I'm like, but it looks like, for all, you know, purposes, a family-friendly show.
Mm-hmm.
But then you start watching it, you're like, no.
Kids, go away.
Yeah.
But I want to watch it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
exactly.
I highly recommend it. But yeah, in that show, the Yule lads annoy witches that were unprotected, but the Yule lads, basically, it was luck of the draw. They would just come and annoy the random citizens of the towns in Iceland. So, but specifically, Grilla would look for the naughty kids to eat, ostensibly.
Awesome.
You know, we are past our break time. We're getting, you know, this is so fun, but we have to go to break. So we will be back in 2 minutes right here on the Para-X Network.
Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
Oh, hey, Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey, Steph.
Hey.
What has your attention?
Oh, I'm listening to Para-X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling.
The Calling. The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on Para-X.
Author James Hershey Jr. from the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Check out the book that started it all. What critics called the scariest book of the year. I am Legion. And if you're still breathing, check out the other two books in the series. The Surrogate of Souls and The Rise of the Revenant. These books will scare the hell out of you. That, I promise.
Hi,
Welcome back to The Gathering here on the Para-X Network, and we are talking about Christmas cryptids, and I think, you know, that extends out to more holiday cryptids, yeah. But we have Kyle Cadell on the line with us from the International Paranormal Museum, and welcome back, Kyle.
And hello.
All your interesting stories that you're bringing. We're talking about Grilla. Is that that's who we're talking about, and her trollness and eating children if they're naughty and all that horrible holiday festivities.
not so good, I don't think. But so I think you wanted to talk about a more fun thing, didn't you? Like, I'm thinking Santa Claus, too, was on the list.
I did. Yeah. That's the interesting thing is when I was doing the research about a lot of the more sinister characters, let's say, like Krampus or Grilla or this Italian witch that I looked up, most of them show up as helpers of St. Nicholas. Who eventually became Santa, but they were originally, like, Santa has never ended up being too dark of a character. His, well, St. Nicholas was a real person. He was actually an archbishop in the 4th century. He was an archbishop of a place called Myra, which is now Turkey. And he was a very famous archbishop. He eventually became the saint, the patron saint of children and sailors. Excuse me, I can't talk. Children and sailors. There's several stories. It's hard to tell, you know, what's true and not at this point, but there's several stories about him saving children, and basically when a ship's about to wreck, he suddenly appears and saves different sailors. A lot of crazy things with him, but I'll go over a couple of his most famous stories here, and then actually tie in another kind of scary figure just really quick with him. But his most famous legend that people attribute to him is that there was a poor man that lived in his city that had three daughters that he didn't have money for their dowry, so unfortunately they couldn't get married. So a woman at the time that couldn't get married most usually got sold into prostitution. So this poor dad, this poor dad had no idea what he was going to do to save his children. And the night's getting closer for his older daughters to have a wedding. And one day he just heard a thud from his living room when he was in the bedroom. And he ran into his living room. And there was a giant sack of gold coins, and it was enough to pay a dowry for his first daughter. So he got to marry off his first daughter, and eventually his second daughter came of age to be married off, and he's worried about it again, and boom, another a sack full of gold showed up in his living room. Mm-hmm. So the time that his eventually in time his third daughter comes of age to be married off, and again he's worried about it, but he thinks I think whoever does this is going to do it again, and I'm going to catch him this time. And so he waits just outside the living room, and sure enough he hears the thud, and someone had thrown a sack of gold through the window, and so he runs out of his house and runs down the alleyway and gets this person, turns them around, and it's St. Nicholas. And St. Nicholas at the time wasn't a saint, of course. He was just his parents died and left him a bunch of money, so he's spreading the wealth and made this guy promise, says, "All glory goes to God, not to me. Please don't tell anyone it was me." Well, of course, the guy did not listen because we have this story here 1,700 years later. So,
wow.
But that's kind of his most famous. And then I want to go into another one that's weird enough to, I think, be part of the show. There's a guy, some legends, this guy was a butcher, some he was an innkeeper. But anyways, there's this bad character that lived in a town, or on the outskirts of a town. And one time, some students were coming through town. It was getting late at night, and they wanted to stay at the guy's place. So they went there, and the guy said, "Of course, come on in. let me feed you, and gave him food and all this stuff. Long story short, this guy found out that they had money, killed the three students, and robbed them. Oh. He disposed of their bodies by, and this is where the butcher story comes in, by chopping them up and putting them in a barrel with brine and letting them pickle.
Oh!
And just put that barrel down in his basement with the other meats for 7 years. It sat there and no one knew. And so eventually St. Nicholas, the Archbishop Nicholas, comes to town, and this guy's like, oh, that would be a prestigious guest to have for dinner. And so he invites him, and St. Nicholas comes, and he's preparing a feast for St. Nicholas, and he says, well, I have this beautiful brisket or whatever. And he's like, no, I don't want that. And he's like, well, I have this wonderful ham, blah, blah, blah. And St. Nicholas is like, I don't want that. And the guy's like, well, what do you want? I'll give you anything you want. He said, well, I want some of that special pork that you have in a barrel that's been pickling for seven. Like, so St. Nicholas somehow knew that this guy did this. So the guy got terrified and ran out of the house. So St. Nicholas went downstairs, found the barrel with the chopped up students in it, and put his finger in the brine and swirled it around. And all three of them reassembled and came back to life and commented on, wow, that was a great rest we just had, and went on about their merry way.
Wow. Well, I'm glad he saved them. I was having horror nightmares about where this is going.
I thought maybe he was going to eat them all pickled or something.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. I'm like, oh, God. Don't tell me Santa's going to eat them.
There's another good ending to that story. That character that did that to him, eventually he ran off through the woods and started concentrating on his life and became repentant, and eventually became the character. All right, now this is French, and I will try to pronounce it, but excuse me. He eventually became the character Pierre Foutard, and that literally translates to Father Whipper. And so he is one of Santa's henchmen. One of the ones, like I said, Santa was a good guy, and they got the bad guys to do his dirty work. Father Whipper came back and started punishing kids in the name of Santa. So that's a lot better use of his evilness than just robbing and killing students, you know? But yeah, he's from France. And interesting side note is that they love this Father Whipper character so much that there's a clone named after him. It's called Whip Leather. Oh. And you can buy it in France.
What is it? A what?
A cologne. No,
it's a cologne, right?
Oh, cologne.
Yep. Yeah. Cologne. Like a perfume, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever. Like,
maybe.
It
smells like pickle. That's gross.
But yeah, so that's just one of the side interesting things about the apocryphal stories that have led to St. Nicholas becoming such a larger-than-life character. In his life, I will mention this one thing, and the story the Catholics now say is probably not true, but there's a legend that he was in, like, a Congress-type setting with Constantine was actually there presiding over it. And there's this one guy, Arius, that was saying a lot of things that eventually was just, lack of a better term, pissing St. Nicholas off. So much so that he eventually went over and punched the guy in the face in the middle of this, like, Congress meeting.
Wow.
So, yeah, he got thrown into jail for that and was stripped of a title and stuff for a while. But, yeah, so Santa himself is a pretty interesting character. So he eventually passes on, and we celebrate him not traditionally on December 25th, but this is still kind of before the church made the Christmas celebration, the big winter celebration. But on December 6th, it's actually traditionally known as the Feast of St. Nicholas. And during the night of December 5th and 6th, St. St. Nicholas will come to your house and leave candy in your shoes if you're good. Side story, in Germany, the same night, December 5th over to December 6th, Krampus will come. It's called Krampusnacht, or Krampus Night. And he will, if you're not good, Santa won't leave candy. He'll leave a birch twig in your shoe. Or if you're really bad, he'll beat you. But anyway, he traditionally comes on December 6th. So that's the Feast of St. Nicholas. And even here in America, there's some German villages and German areas that they have a Feast of St. Nicholas and Christmas as well. But, he died, became a saint, and became just this larger-than-life character that was based on charity and based on giving for children. And interesting side note, in the 11th century, I found this out, his bones were actually stolen by a bunch of Italian sailors, Italian sailors that came through and wanted to make a tourist attraction in their own home. So they are in their own village. So they thought, well, the bones of St. Nicholas would make a good tourist attraction. So they went and stole them. But
so what happened to them then? Did they get them back?
They eventually got them back. I went and fell down to the rabbit hole on this one. They did forensic tests on it. They aren't sure if they got the correct bones back. And furthermore, they aren't sure if the bones that were stolen in the first place were St. Nicholas's. They were just the ones that were supposed to be his. But it was this whole big ordeal.
Sounds like an ordeal.
Yeah, so he becomes this larger-than-life character. And there's not really like a standardized vision of Santa until in 1809, Washington Irving, who you may know from Legend of Sleepy Hollow, or Rip Van Winkle, he actually wrote a book called A Knickerbocker's History of New York, where he depicts him as this pipe-smoking guy that flies a red wagon. And that was from in 1809. In 1822, The Night Before Christmas was written. And that was kind of the solidifying vision of Santa. And at that time, if you think about that poem, they talk about a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer, which seems weird for a big, fat guy in a red suit.
Right.
But that's because at the time, the idea of St. Nicholas has already morphed into an elf. People had thought about Santa as basically what we think about his Santa's elves as. Just little 2-3 foot tall guys. He did wear a red suit traditionally, but he had a tiny sleigh. That's how he could fit through chimneys.
I guess I haven't even thought about that.
I haven't either.
Yeah.
So Santa's an elf.
Yeah.
Traditionally.
Apocryphally, he's still an elf up there, but he's like a full-size regular dude hanging out with smaller elves. I don't know if his mom took growth hormones or something. But traditionally, he was thought of as an elf, and it wasn't until a guy named Fred Meisen in 1930 got hired by a company called Coca-Cola that he was in charge of their holiday marketing campaign, and he was an artist, and he made these traditional-looking photos of what we know today as Santa, a big, jolly, fat guy, usually Caucasian, with a big beard in a red suit. And he didn't come up with the idea. He based it a little bit on Norman Rockwell's paintings, but he solidified the idea. And now, almost 100 years later, that is who Santa Claus is.
Wow. That's crazy.
And don't forget the polar bears who drink the Coca-Cola.
And then the polar bears
hang out with Santa. Yeah.
Exactly.
And sometimes those Coca-Cola commercials are just the polar bears drinking the Coca-Cola, right?
Yeah. That's true. And I'm sure that's how, in our day and age, folklore gets created, is that either a company, well, Elf on a Shelf, look at him. Like, that's a relatively new phenomenon, and everyone has an Elf on a Shelf, and that was made by a company, and now in 200 years when people study our time, that will be one of, oh, their culture created this, you know? Yeah. Just like we look at Krampus or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
That's Isn't that interesting when you think about it that way?
It is. I hadn't thought about it like that. But it's interesting how that legend has morphed and changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Evolved and changed. Yeah. Elf on a Shelf, creepy. One of our listeners is saying, I agree. I wouldn't want an elf on the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like them.
I don't either. Well, that's really cool. So really, it was the Coca-Cola company who created the image of Santa. But, you know, some of the older visions of Santa, like from Norway and Sweden, you know, show a guy and it can be blue robes even, you know, and he's always with, you know, lots of animals and the snow and the bag of goodies and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, and even Father Christmas was his own separate character until eventually he got lumped in as just another version of Santa. But he developed independently from the idea of Santa Claus.
Well, and you know, Santa Claus, you know, we talked about this with a couple of weeks ago, because, you know, the legend of Santa rolls right in with, you know, the Norse god Odin, who used to fly around with his Valkyries and give presents to all the kids on Christmas, you know?
Yes. So, yeah, and the big thing there is he had horses instead of reindeer.
Yeah. And they were called something. I can't remember the names. But the Valkyries had something to do with it too, you know, and I don't know if you're a Norse mythology or you're a Vikings freak like I am, you know, when we're from Minnesota. So, you know, almost everybody here is Norwegians.
Yeah.
And so I always say, you know, Viking rat blood runs in our veins. But I mean, it's really fascinating topic, I think, you know, because they really did, you know, those Norse gods are crazy, and the Valkyries and Valhalla and, you know, all of that.
And it's so crazy to think about just thousands of years later, all the things that are incorporated into our everyday life that originate. I mean, even Thor's day, you know, even Thursday, like that. So much of our life is dependent on the legends that were created or discovered, however your personal beliefs are, thousands of years ago.
It is absolutely true. So, yeah. Oh, so fun. So, something to think about. And, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, too, that, you know, Santa's reindeer are really females. You knew this, correct?
Yep, because male reindeers shed their antlers in the winter.
Girl power. I mean, you know, I giggle about it because I'm like, you know, it would have to be the girls to do this. You know, I'm just saying. Oh, well, this has been such a fun chat. Did you have anything else on your list, Kyle? I can't remember.
Yeah, we have a couple of minutes
left. I'd love to use the last couple of minutes. I'll just throw a couple quick fire things out to you. Of course, I researched as much as I could winter solstice celebrations, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of history that's known about that. We know that the Druids, which even that is a catch-all term for people that lived in England, celebrated winter solstice. Stonehenge was built to line up perfectly with the winter solstice. But we don't know a lot of that. Most of what we know from Druids, we learned from the Romans, and it's propaganda because they're the ones that killed off the Druids. But there's a lot of interesting things from, like, a Yule log, for instance, which just gets incorporated with Christmas, and it's meant to burn, you're meant to burn it to keep the evil spirits away. And that's something that people have been doing for thousands of years, and I just think that's so awesome, you know, because the spirits are more active because it's the longest night of the year. So I just love that little kind of stuff like that. And I want to also mention Saturnalia. That's a huge Roman winter solstice festival. It's not actually about, well, it is about winter solstice. It's a week-long thing, and it's kind of about the rebirth of the sun. It finishes on December 24th, I believe, which is just about when the sun is noticeably moving again and the days start getting longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a week-long festival of debauchery, basically, where the big thing is the big thing is the law of misrule, where, of course, they had slaves in Roman times. And this is the one week of the year that the Romans would let the slaves, they'd pick one of their slaves to be in charge of the household, and the slaves would get to wear their owner's clothing, the owners would have to cook for them, and not just slaves, just the lower caste of people that relied on the aristocrats. They got to be in charge, they got to be lawmakers for a week. And that's just kind of reflected in today's Christmas, where we celebrate charity and giving and that kind of stuff, and cooking for the homeless. That's mm-hmm. integral, and that's all from the Romans being crazy, you know?
Yeah, it is interesting how certain pieces kind of carry through to current traditions. So, mm-hmm. of, you know, past celebrations. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, this is a very, that's why we say happy holidays, because you can celebrate numerous, whatever ones you choose, or all of them, right?
Yeah, past, present,
exactly,
and
yeah.
whatever. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's very cool.
And, you know, our friend Kristen Barton, who is a Wiccan high priestess, used to always tell us that, you know, the Yule log, they took from the tree, the Yule tree, the year before, and they took the branches off, and then that trunk became the Yule log for the next year. Isn't that cool?
Oh, that's cool.
You got to love awesome. That idea, you know? So,
yeah.
Just a thought, save that trunk, and then, you know, we'll just burn it, you know, this year for the Yule log.
I love that.
I know, I do too. I like that.
Well, I want to mention one last thing while I have just have a minute. Not too much information found about her, but this is my favorite punishment of bad kids that I found in anything. This woman's name is Frau Perkta, and she's German, so I guess she was hanging out with Krampus. But she both rewards and punishes kids. And this is, I got to warn you, this is more disgusting than even the stew. For really bad kids, she kills them, cuts open their stomachs, disembowels them, and fills them with garbage.
Oh, what?
Oh, my God.
Who comes up with this stuff? This is awful.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
Like, that's horrible. Like, not even the slitting of the stomach, like, they have to add insult to injury by stuffing them with garbage.
With garbage. And that's just for being bad? Like, how bad do you have to be to have that done to you? I mean, I hope it's super bad. I hope this isn't your average naughty kid.
I hope it just wasn't somebody chewing gum in somebody's hair or something.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, my room was a little dirty this year. So.
Yeah, well, so was everybody's, you know, even mine gets occasionally cast.
God, if that was true, I would have been in big trouble.
Me too.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this has been a delightful hour, and oh, my gosh, we only have 1 minute left. So, Kyle, we have to have you on again at some point in the new year.
Absolutely.
Because we could talk for hours about cryptids in the home.
Yes. Room.
And we didn't even get to half the list.
I know.
We'll have to have you back on.
So, thank you so much for being on. And again, he is, Kyle is from the Paranormal Cryptid Research Museum.
International Paranormal Museum.
What did I say?
Something
about cryptids. Oh, I'm sorry. Because we're talking about cryptids.
Yeah, we were.
Say it again.
It's the International Paranormal Museum. And I know that there's more to the title, but that's the gist of it, that we can find you on Facebook, correct?
Yeah, find the Facebook link.
Exactly. Yeah, that will get you to my Facebook.
Yeah. Perfect.
Thanks so much for being on, Kyle, and happy holidays, whatever you choose to celebrate.
Yes.
And to all happy our holidays. Listeners, this is our last live show of the year. We will have a couple of really good taped shows on Christmas and
New Year's.
So we will be back on the air on... I don't know what day that is.
I think
the
6th,
7th,
8th, I don't know. We'll find it and we'll tell you.
The first Tuesday of January anyway.
Yeah. We have no idea what date it is. But anyway, thank you to everybody that's listening. Thank you for everybody in the chat room. Para X for hosting us and Sarge for producing us. And thank you and happy holidays and happy new year to everybody.
Thank you.
Have a great one. Have a good